This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free, and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot, so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful-looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. RMG Networks has been doing workplace communications and employee engagement since the days the Dallas company was known as Simon Communications. There have been some interesting twists and turns in the story of RMG, like a curious spell as a digital out-of-home media company that also did the legacy Simon stuff. But the management team is now squarely focused on the high-opportunity workplace vertical. I had a great chat with George Klopp, the Chief Technology Officer for RMG, about where the company is at, the evolution of its corporate CMS, and how what it does differs in the marketplace. Among the particularly interesting things, content decisions that are determined and automated using machine learning, or AI. Have a listen. George, thanks for joining me this morning. Can you give me a rundown on what RMG is all about? A lot of people in the industry will know, but some other listeners may not.
Yeah, no, thank you, Dave. And it's an honor to speak with you today. RMG Networks is a digital signage company where our mantra is to really go beyond the screen. So we make software to engage employees with digital signs, but also in a full omni-channel approach that goes beyond the screen to do employee engagement in a one-on-one fashion that's on the desktop, the mobile device, Slack, Twitter, email, etc.
Now, that's interesting. Many of the companies I speak with these days, they say they're a solutions company, they're a turnkey provider, blah, 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 blah. They kind of almost shy away from saying, well, we're just a software company. I think you guys do more than just software though, right? Like you will, just about everybody does services of some kind.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, we'll be involved in the implementation phase. We do have our own media players. We've actually streamlined that line to just have two versions of our media players. But with our new product, Corbett, we actually work in a broad ecosystem and support many different third-party media players. But, you know, we'll be there and we'll assign project managers to a job. But our core focus is not on the digital signage integration, but you know, pristinely on the software itself.
And that works for you because it seems like in a lot of cases, end users are saying, we want this, but we don't want a whole bunch of different companies plugged into this. We want to talk to one company who's going to take us all the way through.
Yeah, exactly right, Dave. That's very common. And again, we've got project managers, we've got a professional services division that will be the one master contractor, if you will, to make sure that we provide a white glove service to that client. But again, we're heavily focused on the software and making sure that employee engagement story comes to life.
Now, you said employee engagement, and the history of RMG goes back to the days when it was called Simon Communications, and then there were some twists and turns where RMG became a media company and was into doing everything from normal digital out-of-home to seatback displays in airlines and everything else, selling the kind of the pre-show on that. You're back now squarely on corporate communications, workplace communications, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, two major use cases. The first one is the employee engagement, where we're at, you know, over 60 of the Fortune 100 in their corporate campuses. The other place where we're used heavily is in contact centers, mission control centers, network operation centers, where, you know, mission critical real-time data is a must.
Yeah, you were doing real-time data and visualizing data, maybe not in the most exotic way, but visualizing a contact center is going back like 20 years, right?
That's correct, yes.
And at that point, what did it look like?
Yeah, I mean, we've totally revamped it. We made some our past software product ES is an on-premise only solution, and so we ended up with a lot of really hard-coded what we call collectors, which would connect to different data sources using a variety of different protocols. And now we've kind of taken that tradition with Corbett into the cloud, where we have two offerings actually. We have Corbett in the cloud, Corbett on-premise. Corbett on-premise can still connect to those local data sources that you have if you've got an older Genesis system or Avaya or Cisco system, but also, of course, connecting to the new modern ACD systems that are in the cloud as well.
So the original version of Corbett that came out, what, 2-3 years ago?
Yeah, in 2017, exactly, towards the end of 2017.
And that was written because the old Simon platform and the legacy platforms were just at a stage where you were kind of adapting what you already had, and the smarter move was just to kind of re-architect the thing?
Yeah, it's a variety of reasons. Without a doubt, it's the re-architecting, investing in a new product, building it from scratch, a lot of feedback on user interface and the ability to quickly learn and quickly publish content, ease of use, super important there as well. And then we really wanted to broaden the horizons and go again beyond the screen and really take this to an omni-channel approach, to where we provided another product called Corbett Go, and that will allow you to take that conversation onto the mobile device, onto Twitter, onto email, onto Slack.
Can you describe how that all plays out? Because omnichannel is one of those terms that's been around for probably 10 years. And when it first came up, people were rolling their eyes, but now it's kind of a baked-in description. But I don't necessarily believe that generally people understand what it is and how it actually looks. It's more like an aspiration than a reality, it seems sometimes.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's good to be skeptical, without a doubt. I mean, my background is consumer marketing, worked at a very large Fortune 500, Epsilon, and we talked omnichannel all the time. And it seemed like a natural play in the digital signage industry, because instead of talking to consumers, we're actually talking to our employees. And just like you develop a bond between the brand and the consumer, you want a bond between the brand and the employee. And there's only so much you can do with the digital screen, because you are broadcasting kind of a one-to-many approach that a lot of people talk about. So how do we take that and make that a little more personalized, a little more relevant, get that audience size down a little bit more? And that's, of course, when you're able to identify who the person is in front of the screen. And in that case, you kind of go to the marketing technologies of, website cookies and the ability to pixel track you, the ability to know your identity. So once you're on a desktop, or once we have your email or your Twitter address, we know who you are. And so instead of broadcasting content out to audiences and in my group, for instance, at RMG, we broadcast directly to George.
So in a, let's use the term campaign, it's not a media campaign, but it's a informational campaign aimed at George. How would that work in practical terms if I'm in the HR department of a Fortune 100 company or communications department, whoever does that sort of thing, and they want to talk to hard to reach employees? What are they doing?
Yeah, no, great question. Exactly. One of the things you discover when you go from that one to many, to that one to few, to the one to one relationship, is you've got to have a lot of content and a lot of messages. That's super important. Even in the marketing space, that was kind of always the thing that would slow us down. It was the final long pole in the tent, so to speak, which was, hey, I've got the ability now to personalize content. I've got the mechanism to schedule it and distribute it. Where's the content at? And that's really what, we want to talk a little bit about Corbett and the machine learning and the ability to automatically have that relevant content. But just answering your question there, it the ability to reach out and touch, let's say, a micro segment. Let's say it's not just George, it's maybe George and a team of 15 people in an audience. And that's exactly how Corbett Go is arranged into campaigns. And that campaign can reach out directly to George. It can reach out to George's group or several of George's group. And George can be in multiple groups, and those campaigns can be targeted and intersect affect each other, much like a marketing campaign could. But then it's really knowing more details about George in order to target him and talk to him. You know, he's interested in performance metrics related to research and development, performance metrics related to professional services, performance metrics related to IT, and those are that's the type of content we want to reach out to George with, as opposed to other content in the company.
If you had to describe the problem that's being solved in workplaces through this omnichannel approach, why is this needed?
Yeah, I mean, it's really needed. Just like when the brand is talking to a consumer, the consumers have attention deficit disorder these days, right? You want to reach out to them on many channels for that message reinforcement. You want to make sure that that message gets across to them in case they miss it on one or few channels. Same thing here with that bond between the brand and the employee. The employee is going to be on your company mobile app. They're going to be on your intranet. They're going to be in your email system. You want to make sure that if you're coming out with a brand new strategic initiative at the company and that affects, you know, this particular person's division, that you're messaging appropriately and hopefully you're hitting them and across all those channels to make sure that that message is reinforced.
Is the approach different between white collar environments and blue collar environments?
Absolutely. I'm definitely not a behavior psychologist, but absolutely. I mean, just in my own personal experience, right? I mean, you might talk to the blue collars working maybe at a supply chain, maybe they're working in a warehouse. You might be reinforcing a different type of message, and you might be okay with more of a broader audience in that case versus more of an individualized or micro segmented audience.
Yeah. To me, the problem that's getting solved, particularly on the blue collar side, is, you know, you mentioned things like emails and intranets and things like that. You get into a supply chain environment or manufacturing, they don't have emails. They don't use a company smartphone app. They don't do any of those things. So how on earth do you reach them?
Yeah, good point. And you know, we've added additional things into our Corvette Go mobile so that the employee be incentivized there, so they can check their pay stub, they can go ahead and check their benefits. For a service worker that maybe is a service technician out there that needs a PDF on how to repair a certain type of machine, those are all little quick go-to links inside of the Corvette Go app. But without a doubt, there's a business strategy involved as well as a technical implementation, and the two have to be in lockstep.
Is it, I remember with Simon going back many years that you guys had written a whole bunch of data connectors, and this is going back a decade or more when connecting data was very complicated and a big, big job. So if you're already connected into a particular system, that was a nice entree into winning a job over a competitor who might have to, you know, set aside 3 months to figure that out. Is it easier now to do that and therefore more competition when you're talking about data connectors?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I mean, as as the ACD systems and other, mission control systems change and adopt more modern protocols like RESTful web services, it's a lot easier to connect to those versus the old days of very, very proprietary protocols on TCP/IP that we had to connect to. There's still customers that have the older systems, so we kind of have to do both. And then I think where we shine in the data space is not only being able to pull in the data, but we also have, you know, the ability to add value-added calculations like sliding window calculations based on time, ability to kind of slice and dice the data in different formats, and then of course the ability to bring in data from many different systems. So you might have ACD system information in the top right, you might have Salesforce data in the top left, you might have spreadsheet data that you have in the bottom left. So the ability to combine that onto one visual display is also a big place where we're used.
Is part of what you offer the ability to visualize that data in interesting ways, or are you really just, you know, doing numbers and charts?
Yeah, it's numbers and charts. It's very transient data. So usually the data, you know, we keep it stored, and you can always run past trends on it. But it's usually, you know, again, in 911 centers, it's calls in queue as of right this moment, and that's what we care about. And then usually the ACD systems themselves, the Avayas of the world, Cisco's and Genesis of the world, they've got other analytical tools that they use on the data as well.
Mm-hmm. Is that what the end user wants? I mean, I've written for many years now about data visualization and the really cool things you can do with it. But I always come back to the challenge of the really cool visualizations of data look beautiful, but do the viewers actually understand what's being communicated here versus just a number or a bar chart?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, that's why you always hear, you know, the analytics word and the insights word. And now, you know, you have AI and machine learning. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it has to be actionable. That's the most important thing, is if we provide pretty charts and pretty data visualization, if it's not actionable, it doesn't make you change your behavior, then it's not that useful.
Is this stuff a lot easier now that I believe Corbett's kind of primarily driven by HTML5, right?
Yeah, I mean, we have native player as well. We kind of do the best of both worlds there, depending on the scenario and what the content is. If it's multi-zone content, we usually are doing HTML5. If it's full screen video, we've got native decode in there. But really, you know, again, where we're focusing is on solving that business problem of the employee engagement. And what we found, you know, what I found actually was, you know, we were very proud of Corbett. We built it for really advanced graphical artists, as well as the kind of the novice who wants to come in and have more of an online greeting card. So we've got something in there that's very Photoshop-esque to create beautiful content. But then we found out really the business problem isn't about creating the content. The business problem is about you've got to rotate through and cycle through very relevant content to employees. And that's where we came up with Corbett AI and our machine learning, where we actually do it in two different ways. One is very typical in the digital science world, where you've got a camera attached to a screen, and we can detect, you know, who's in that field of view, how many people are there, how long they dwell, how many detections we have. And then that kind of registers a score with that content. And then over time, what we do is we learn what content people are stopping and watching and what content they're not. And we play more of the content that they like. So that's one of the ways we're using machine learning. The other way we're using it is, you know, a lot of our customers just don't have the camera feedback at all. So there we're really doing what's called unsupervised learning, and we're actually learning about what content is assigned to which audience based on the playtime. So if you've got a CEO video in there for 4 minutes, but you've got other content in there maybe for 10 seconds, then that CEO video gets a higher weight into the model.
So is that learning just providing insights for you, or is the learning then shaping automatically or dynamically how that playlist looks?
Yeah, you got it, Dave. Exactly right. So it's automatically, we've got this concept called set it and forget it, which is it's automatically changing the content for you. Because again, that's the big business problem we see out there, is that once you realize that you have the ability to talk to all these different audiences, even on a digital screen, let alone the one-to-one features that we have in there, you've got to come up with that content, and it's got to be rich and engaging, and it's got to be fresh. And that's really the biggest problem we have, is our end users might have a department of one, a department of three, a department of five people, and they just really can't keep up with the content needs.
Yeah. Has that been the big challenge in a lot of cases with those kinds of companies, where they've got the money to put it in, they've got the money to, you know, pay the software support and all that stuff, but they've assigned somebody who does three other things too?
Yeah, exactly right. And sometimes the people that are assigned to digital signage are more the AV IT guys, and they're not necessarily thinking top of mind, okay, how do I keep employees engaged? They're thinking, how do I keep the system up and running so the screen doesn't go dark? So, and that's an important aspect too, but really where you're going to get the value out of the investment in the corporate campus is to really enforce those messages. And we kind of categorize those messages kind of into three flavors. You kind of have the low type of messages, which are, you know, you got weather feeds, you got news feeds, you got sports scores. Medium content is more like health, recognition, company news, maybe some safety messaging. It's all very important. And then what we would consider the behavior changing content is that really, really top notch content where you're trying to change that behavior. It's more performance management based on your quarterly goals, your leadership reinforcement, your mission statement, your vision statement as a company, your KPIs. That's really what we want to reinforce and get out there. And that's what makes the most use of the screens in the corporate campus.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit screenfeed.com to explore the 75 plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
So for a client that you've had for a great many years, they probably have their heads around what they're doing and they've evolved it. If you have a new client or prospect, do they come to you with a pretty rich sense of what they want to do, or do you have to invest quite a bit of time kind of working with them as you just described on, okay, what are you trying to do here? What are you trying to resolve?
Yeah, I mean, I think they see us as thought leaders in the space, and they want us to provide some, in addition to providing the media players and the screens and the software, they want us to provide that strategy of, okay, what do we think works out there? And that's super important. I mean, of course, it's usually a mixture of both. I mean, the company has, hey, you know, this is some information. I want to definitely make sure I get my traffic and weather out when it's time to leave and do my day parting and early morning. I want to kind of have some reinforcement messages. But we talk to them about time of day messaging, day parting, what type of messages to put out there. It's also kind of where the machine learning comes into play too, because not only do we assign scores based on interest, but also on content that preceded it. So for instance, we might see a lot of dwells and detects on a certain piece of content, but only because the content that preceded it was actually very interesting as well. So all about content rotation and programming, and you quickly realize, like we talked about before, that it becomes a bit overwhelming to be able to program and schedule out this content. And that's where the Corbett machine learning comes into play to do this for you on your behalf in an automated fashion.
Is it your own computer vision solution, or are you working with a partner?
Well, it's open source. We use TensorFlow and OpenCV, but we talk to those libraries directly. We're not working with a third party at all.
Okay, so that obviously is going to reduce your costs, like the overall bill of sale, because you're not kind of layering in somebody else's solution as well, right?
Exactly correct. That's what we're trying to do, democratize it. Where you have the ability to put a camera on a digital screen, it's great. And there's nothing special about the camera. I mean, it can be just a USB plug and play into a Windows player, and that's fine for us.
I follow computer vision for a long time, and they do, you know, some pretty amazing things. I'm thinking in the working circumstance that you've described, while those focus platforms can certainly do all that, what they offer, you probably only need like 10% of or 15% of, because you're just trying to understand the audience, right?
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, we're looking at dwells, detects. We're just looking if people are really interested in the content. We also collect gender and age if you know clients want that for further analysis. But we're not providing deep, rich heat maps after the fact or anything along those lines. We're just providing them that information that tells them, okay, is this content useful or not useful? And then having the machine learning algorithm go ahead and schedule like content for them automatically.
So how would this work? How does this physically look in a typical enterprise level client's deployment? You know, I suspect for, let's say, an insurance company, it looks a little bit different than a company that's a manufacturer, let's say a pharmaceuticals or whatever. what do they put in and what are they doing?
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, if you kind of think about this from a maturity scale, like a line from low maturity to high maturity, we're trying to get all of our clients to that high maturity scale. But it's really that crawl, walk, run strategy. So you might put this in at an insurance company, and it's really just about brand reinforcement at first. They're doing low value messaging. You know, they're doing news and weather and traffic, which is very important too. It's good stuff. Employees want to see it. But then they're maybe doing some brand reinforcement, maybe some yearly goals. And then we're just trying to move them along that continuum and talk to them about, okay, higher, richer, engaging content. And the type of messaging would just be different between the companies just based on their business and based on their business strategy. And we would just talk to them about that when we're doing the implementation.
I'm curious about the types and scale and numbers of displays that get used and where they're positioned. Have you guys, I'm sure you have learned over the years, what works in terms of size of display? Does it need to be big, or is it better off being more intimate and one-to-one? Where they're best positioned, where it's been shown that it really doesn't work in corporate communications, that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of our service offerings is actually an audit check to go into the corporate campus and make sure that everything's at the proper eye level. I mean, you'll run into crazy things. You'll see screens kind of hidden by doors and things of that nature where people don't have a clear view. So there's a lot of low-hanging fruit usually to solve there. And obviously for us, I mean, the best thing is a larger proliferation of digital signage. So not only just having a screen in a common area, but maybe an interactive kiosk paired with that screen. That's a real common thing we like to talk to our clients about. Another thing we like to do at the audits is really talk about the importance of the screen. A lot of times people don't think the screen or the content's that important until it goes down. And then when it actually goes down, you have a big issue. So the ability to have that active mode, having a backup player that's in that active state so they can just take right over and there's no issues after the fact there.
Are there places where one might think a screen or screens make sense, but experience has shown, yeah, that's not a good location. It's not the right time.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, definitely from a safety perspective, you would not want to put screens where, you know, there's heavy equipment or something like that where safety's an issue and you could get distracted. I think that, you know, it's just common sense probably prevails in those cases. Without a doubt, the common areas are very, very important. Lobbies, meeting areas, we typically find in the corporate campuses, you know, the welcoming area of the corporate campus has usually got the pizzazz. It's usually got the very, very large video walls along with the big experiential displays. And then as you kind of get to, you know, the 10th floor, 11th floor, maybe a corporate building, you know, you've got screens spaced out, let's say every 30, every 40 feet, something along those lines.
If I'm an end user and I come to you and say, hi, I'm a convenience store operator. I run 500 locations all through the U.S. Southeast. I'm interested in your solution. Do you guys do retail or other verticals, or do you say, sorry, we're kind of focused on workplace?
We're very focused on workplace, but the scalability of the solution will work great for QSR and retail. We're just not actively, from a sales strategy perspective, pursuing that because it's a very crowded space. But we have done trials with leading QSRs, for instance, and done really well there. So we're very open to it. We know a lot of the requirements that are there. We've of course scalability tested Corbett with tens of thousands of players. We know from a scalability perspective we're fine. We know from a player perspective, content caching perspective, if the network's down, if something goes down, that the player will always try to run. We've got that active ability too to make sure that a player will always take the place of another player if for some reason that player were to go down. So we've got a lot of the fault tolerance built into the platform to handle those kind of situations.
So you're at Corbett 2 now. What is it about 2.0 that's very different from what maybe users already know?
Yeah, I mean, I think up until 2.0, very, very focused on the table stakes of digital signage, you know, making a content builder that's really geared towards that graphical artist that feels very comfortable on one end, and then the other end, making also a quick editor that's really comfortable for someone who doesn't want to be a graphic artist, who just wants to come in and set up content. We put a lot of the foundations of Set It and Forget It in place before 2.0. We had the concept of dynamically tagging content, pulling content in from multiple sources like OneDrive and Dropbox and SharePoint, tagging it and automatically playing it. So again, you've got that set it and forget it concept. But with 2.0, we really came out with the concept of relevant refresh, and that's the machine learning that we've been talking about here, where we use different models. We use some supervised models, some unsupervised models, and machine clustering to make sure that, you know, we can actually send out relevant content without you having to be involved at all. And then, of course, the whole idea with machine learning is that the machine's going to detect patterns in the data that you might as a human being not necessarily uncover, or you might not necessarily have the time to uncover. So if you've got tens of thousands of pieces of content in your media library, which is really very common for a good sized corporation, you might forget that there's patterns and relationships in that data, and that the machine learning can figure that out for you.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about RMG more broadly. You're based in Dallas, right?
That's correct, yes.
And where else are their offices?
We have an office still in London as well. And so those are our two offices right now, Dallas and London. And we split off the Middle East division last year.
When you say split it off, it's a separate operating company, nothing to do with?
Exactly correct, yes. They're a licensed reseller of our products, but they're an independent company.
Okay. Do you sell primarily through the channel, or it seems to me, at least in the Simon days, it was heavily direct?
Yeah, I mean, heavily direct in the U.S. and heavily to the channel in the U.K. and Europe. So both models.
And there have been a few twists and turns through the years. Where is RMG at as a company now? Is it a private company or a public company? And how many people do you guys have?
Yeah, it's a private company. We're a little over 100 people right now. We have right size. We've compressed a little. We were taken private at the end of 2018. And we're glad to say we're profitable now, and we're very proud of that. And we're looking to expand at this point.
Okay. So a couple things. Where can people find you online, and where might they see the product at a trade show?
Yeah, no, great question. So, two websites, rmgnetworks.com, of course. And then our brand new product is called Corbett, K-O-R-B-Y-T. You can go to corbett.com as well to learn about our product. You can see videos. You can see the product in use right on the website. We're going to be at DSE coming up. And we're going to be at ISE, I guess, is coming up even a little sooner. We'll be at ISE. And then we'll be at DSE as well.
Okay, yeah, this will be running next week when ISE is on, so people can maybe hear about it and then find their way over to you guys. Do you have a dedicated booth, or are you with a partner?
I believe we have a partner there, yeah. At DSE, we have a dedicated booth, but at ISE, we're in partner.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting. Thanks for spending some time with me, George.
Hey, Dave, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.